No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, what's going on, Rugby Rant fans? It's the Hammer, and I've got a special guest who I will introduce, but I'm pretty sure anybody that's watched the show for a while knows who this legend is. And yes, he is a legend. But I hopefully that intro didn't glitch out like it did for me. Nevertheless, today, the Hammer, because I've started to use myself in the third person, is running a show with, like I said, a legend. This guy does a great podcast, the Bonus Point podcast. If you haven't checked it out, check it out. I mean, he is killing it with information about Super Rugby, and we'll get more of that later. And, of course, that is none other than TJ Olson. TJ, mate, what's shaking?
Mate, it's good to be back on the podcast and good to be chatting code with you again. It's been too long. Really excited to get out and see you in person soon with the Chicago All Blacks test coming up. It's going to be great, mate. But this will be a good consolation prize until I can get out there in November.
Yeah, how about it? And just like any good podcaster will do, he knows exactly when to plug appropriate stuff. So let's just talk about it. November 1st. All Blacks versus Ireland, and my buddy Norm Smythe is hosting the rugby party at Reggie's in Chicago. This is a huge bar downtown. They're a music venue. They have a lot of comedic guests. But on that Saturday, 9 o'clock a.m. start Central, and it'll be going throughout the day all the way to the wee hours of the evening or morning or whatever you can stay up until. But basically, they're going to have a lineup happening all day. If you didn't get tickets to the game, but you want to be in Chicago to catch all the action, you can go there to watch the game. You can stay the whole day. If you've got tickets to the game, you can go party, hang out at 9 o'clock all the way up until you want to get on the bus and get down to the game. You can do that. And of course, the Hammer, the big guy, and the Bonus Point will be in the house, and we're going to be bringing some special guests on during our hour segment, having a lot of fun and doing a remote pod. It's going to be a bit of an experiment, but it should be absolutely a load of fun. So nevertheless, check us out. Link below. You can get your tickets if you want to reserve a table. Otherwise, $40 gets you in for food, beverage. There are t-shirts available. It's going to be lit like a firecracker. So at any rate, but we're going to bust it down with my guy TJ today. We got a great show. As many guys, if you watched last week, know, Scott has kind of got some family things going on. He's got a young son, and they are fostering and is that child's blood brother. So he's doing the Lord's work, the good work, and therefore I'm picking up the slack, which I don't mind doing because he needs some support and help right now. But that's why we bring on great guests like TJ. So TJ, I need to ask you, what have you been seeing going on lately? Because we're going to come up in just a second with that information for our Around the Pitch segment. All right, what do you got?
Mate, it's been pretty crazy in the rugby world lately. Like, we've had Six Nations this past year. We've had a lot of good build-up into the British and Irish Lions tour, and now it's finally at our doorstep. And I think the one thing that I've been noticing is obviously the build-up into the British and Irish Lions games that are coming, but the Anzac test that hasn't happened for decades with Australia and New Zealand. They're coming together for that invitational test, Coach Ian Foster and Les Kiss as well. It's going to be a great game, but they did have some pretty terrible news. One of the, if not the greatest player at the moment in the world, at the Richie Mwanga, he has now broken his hand, so he is unavailable for that historic match. I was hoping to get potentially Quade Cooper or someone in there who has as much flair as possible as the backup, but he's now gone off. He's currently on our side of the world. He's in America at the moment, and he's training with the Australian flag football team, trying to trial out for that for the Olympics. So a bit of disappointing news for the Anzac test, but really excited to see who they slot in to that fly half spot once they name an official squad.
Well, there's no shortage of talent in that part of the world. I'm sure they can find somebody. Well, it'd be great to have either Mwanga or Quade Cooper, you know, just because of their creative ability at the 10 spot. I mean, it's going to be the Anzac test. I love historic tests like that. I mean, those are the things that rugby was built upon, and to bring those elements back, I think, is a way to bring the game back to the forefront of people's minds who have maybe lost their way with rugby union.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I totally agree. It's something that is really special. The one thing I'm a bit disappointed about is the jersey that just came out recently with New Balance. It's a bit boring. You'd think that they would have put in a lot of effort. And you're right, there is a lot of talent in Australasia that can fill in those jersey spots, and we can get a pretty historic team. But I think the one thing I was really excited about is there's been so much hype around Richie coming back into the All Blacks fold because he went off, he got his money, and rightly so, in Japan. And he was finally coming back to, I guess you can call it, somewhat home soil, like on that side of the world, and rejoining the boys that he's played with and getting to play with some amazing Australian superstars as well. But I guess it just wasn't meant to be, eh?
Yeah, I guess not. It's unfortunate. So while we're on the note of the British and Irish Lions tour, and I love those tours too. You know, I love it when I don't know, like I can think back to those early tours just on the eve of professionalism when, you know, the Lions would go down there and they'd play a provincial team and it would be a really, really good match. I mean, some of those Super League teams, even the last tour of New Zealand was awesome, you know, and then they had the specialized jerseys for each one of the Super Rugby teams. And there were some pretty close matches. So I love those midweek games. You know, again, that kind of harkens back to that amateurism days, right? Where it was, you know, anything could happen, anybody could win, and it was tough for the British and Irish Lions to have a run at going undefeated, right?
100%. Yeah, I think if you look in recent years, when I was living in Australia, when they did their last tour, 12 years ago, I think just the buzz and the electricity in the city was incredible. And like you said, with the game that I went to, I think it was the Queensland Reds, they played not a second-rate British and Irish Lions team, but like their second string. That was probably one of the most entertaining games I'd seen in a long time in that year. And I think it also gives players and teams an opportunity to go, okay, our Super Rugby season is over, but we still got a bit to give and add a little bit of razzle-dazzle in, add some things in that they can potentially implement into the next season, and they get an opportunity to play a very special occasion. A lot of those guys who don't get selected for international duties, they get to play that incredible team. So, yeah, I'm all there with you. I love those midweek games, and it's just good to see the game growing and really getting back to supporting the fans and giving them the product that they really enjoy.
Well, and it's almost perfect timing too, right? Because now you've got a buzz being created in Australia, and we are just a few years away from the Rugby World Cup. I mean, we're two years out from Rugby World Cup.
Yeah.
So hopefully this kind of begins that buzz starts now, and they can really build up to 2027 and make again something special happen in Australia for rugby union.
Yeah, 100%. You see it every year with the Olympics and things like that. It's you get to see the Rugby World Cup in France, and then you get to see the Olympics the following year. You get to work out the kinks as well. So when the World Cup finally does come to Australia, they know exactly what works and they can just hit the ground running.
Exactly. So I got to ask you before we go to my around the pitch segment, what's your prediction for this three test series?
I think Joe Schmidt's going to come out with a lot of good ideas and some good tactics, especially against a tough British and Irish Lions. I think they've got a team that can get it done. I do think it is going to be a 2-1 split in the British and Irish Lions' favour, though. I think this is probably the best British and Irish Lions team ever assembled, at least in the last probably two tours. And I think Australia's got a lot of firepower. They're humming at the moment, but they've got a couple of players that aren't performing too well, like your Taniela Tupos and a couple other people. You've got Joseph Suaalii, who had an outstanding season, but he's coming off a jaw injury as well. So I think there's just too many variables where I'm not going to pick the Wallabies to go up 2-1 or take it out. I think I'm going to pick the British and Irish Lions. I think the Wallabies can get one, though. I think they can get one over them.
I think that's critical. If they get one, that's a pretty good tone. It's a relatively young team happening there for Joe Schmidt. So, you know, if they can show out, have a one good test match, maybe they get the first one, kind of nick them at the beginning, or maybe they get that second one and then really make that third one an event worth watching, you know, for those people who are not only in Australia but around the world that are paying attention to the British and Irish Lions tour of Australia. So exciting stuff, mate. Exciting stuff. So my around the pitch real quick, I'm going to build on last week. Last week I talked about the retirement of Cam Dolan, and anybody that's watched the show just knows I consider Cam a friend. He's a great individual, and I hope the best for he and Ellen as he steps into the next chapter. He just got married last year, and so it's great to see them start their new life in New Orleans. So I'm gonna add to that, and just as of today, the recording Monday, I think it's the 16th here today. Marcel Brocky, San Diego Legion, born in Los Angeles. That's how he qualified as an Eagle, even though he was raised most of his life in South Africa. 37 years old, played in Western Province in the Currie Cup, played for the Stormers in Super Rugby. You know, had a cup of coffee, played for Western Force, 30 games, played for the MLR teams, the Austin Gilgronis and the San Diego Legion, and had 28 caps for the United States, even captained the United States. He was Eagle number 503, his debut against Tonga. So, Marcel, congratulations, wonderful career. Thank you for representing the United States, but also thank you for representing San Diego and the MLR and doing the good work of spreading the gospel here in the United States. Lord knows we need it as we build up to 2031. We're going to need ambassadors like you. And with that, I will say, folks, don't be surprised if at the end of the season we start to see some of the guys that are right around that age and right around that cap number of Marcel retire from the MLR. You know, a lot of these guys, I think we're seeing Scott Lawrence's team start to filter through and phase out some of the guys that are in their, you know, mid 30s. And with that, I think they're looking on to like I said, with Cam, the next chapter. So don't be surprised. So yeah, that's what I got for around the pitch on my side of things. But stick with us. We're going to come back with a rant. TJ's joining me, and this is what I love about this legend. This is why he is a legend. His analysis, I just respect it so much. Such an astute student and coach of the game. He understands all the permutations, and I think he's going to bring that knowledge to everybody as we talk about the conference semifinals. And one is going on as we speak right now. Houston versus LA got rain delayed, so it's going on, and it's on my other screen as we talk right now. Houston's up. I think it is 12-0.
No.
it's a little, DJ, I know it hurts your heart. It's like a dagger in the heart, but it's a little sloppy, and I think that's going to play to Houston's favor. You know, that the turf is being thrown up like a golfer picks his wedge through a swing. So we'll see what happens here in the next couple of minutes as they come back. Yeah, 12-0. So we're going to come back. Before we do that, I just want to say we're going to get a word from our sponsors, and that sponsor is Macron. I want to thank Macron. Scott and I want to thank Macron so much for all they've done for us this year and all they've done for, more importantly, for our fans. Providing those hoodies every week for our Super Brew contest, it's awesome. We're getting those out to fans, and they really love them. It gives them a chance to wear the brand that the Eagles wear, a brand that their favorite MLR team wears. And by the way, it's a lesser price than at our store. You can get the link below. All the goodies on there are what we pay, Scott and I pay, and it's totally discounted to that level so that you can get some pretty sweet merch on your side of things for a relatively cheap price. It's cheaper than, you know, what some of the MLR teams are selling that stuff for. But I'd like to formally announce that we finally have a grand prize. And in case you didn't see it, there it is. This is the jersey that our Super Brew winner for 2025 will have earned here in just a couple weeks. It is a Wales signed jersey, courtesy of Macron and Tim Brown. There you see 102 of 250. So it's a pretty slick jersey. It's identified there, some nice proper stitching, some nice organized signatures there, and it's numbered. So you get your limited edition shirt. In addition, we are going to have second and third prizes. We're working on rugby rant gear. I'm wearing the Rigel Hero top. I love this top. It fits perfect. And that and a pair of shorts, which I'm also wearing, by the way, that's going to go out to either the second or third. And then the drill top, it's called the Granite Contact Top. Again, it's also on sale there. I have this piece. I love it. It's a proper contact top for rugby. So those are going to go out to the second and third place winners there. So we have some great prizes coming up thanks to Macron. But when we come back again, I'm going to let TJ talk a lot more and our rant. But first, we're going to get a word from our sponsor, Macron. And we're back, folks. Yes, we are talking playoffs, more specifically the results in the first round, the conference semifinals. I'm currently watching one up on my screen because Houston LA are playing, and if I get distracted, it's because Bertrandau is close to the line. No, the LA's is getting close to the line. They're within the 5-meter line. Houston's up 12-0, but hopefully will be a tight affair and a lot of fun to watch. Nevertheless, TJ, we're going to talk about these playoff games. Obviously, this one we'll have to dig a little deeper into our wealth of knowledge because we don't know the outcome as of the taping of the show of this Houston LA match. But let's start with the first match of the weekend. And that was on Saturday. It was a game I had the privilege of being on the sideline and being part of the broadcast team. Of course, I loved it. Got my season ticket holder hat here. I loved it. I enjoyed it. Hounds 27, Old Glory 16. What were your thoughts in this game?
So I think it was pretty interesting to watch. The Hounds starting the match off pretty slowly. I think they conceded a few penalties, which kind of gave Old Glory an early lead and gave them an insight into it. Sorry, I'm just in the outback in LA. We've got plenty of noise in the background. Just working on location so you can hear helicopters and stuff. But I think it was really good to see former RFC LA player Jason Emery really take on that opportunity and was really effective with his kicking, capitalizing on those discipline issues that Chicago presented. And I think DC's defense also looked pretty amazing early on, making it very difficult for the Hounds to kind of find their rhythm, enter their opponent's territory. So with that and the Hounds struggling with the execution, I think they had a failed lineout throw, I think, in a pretty promising position. Mm-hmm. I think it was just first half, all Old Glory, but I think the second half resurgence for the Hounds, it was incredible. I think when you look at the statistics, you know that I guess against Old Glory and Chicago, Chicago have always led from the front with their defense. Like they're leading by crazy by at least I think 300 more tackles than Old Glory over the season. Their missed tackles were a little bit higher as well, but their dominant tackles really high on the end. So we know that they can bring a lot of defense to the table, but that second half, the forward pack, particularly people like Charlie Abel and Piculo playing a crucial role in that second half comeback, scoring key tries for that, propelling the Hounds ahead. You can see that just because you have a bad start doesn't mean that you can't roll through and really punch through and finish the game off. So I think the pack's performance in this situation really propelled the Hounds toward that really good victory.
You know, there are a lot of really great points that you hit on that I'm glad you brought up. I mean, you're right. Penalties were killer in the first half for the Hounds, and it allowed Old Glory to not only control territory, but control possession and the run of play. You know, I would say, again, you talked about the strong defense, and that's the interesting thing about this Hounds group, right? They pride themselves on physicality. They pride themselves on strong defense. I've talked to a lot of the boys, especially in that forward pack, about that element, and you know, they really pride themselves there. So they were wise in that they stayed patient. They just stayed in the game. They really used their defense to carry them through. I mean, I think they were leading, if I'm not mistaken, it was 10-6, I think. And then at the end of the first half, Old Glory DC put in that try to go up by one or two right there at half going into the sheds. And, you know, in my mind, they fell. First of all, the penalty was killer because it put Old Glory down into the red zone. But then they made that killer mistake, you know, in that they fell asleep on the attack, and it allowed Old Glory to get that run of play. Their defensive shape was out of position, and it allowed them to score that try out wide. And so, you know, I think that's where they kind of fell asleep a little bit. They thought that Old Glory would kind of finish out the half and they would go into the sheds, and that didn't happen. And they had to get their wits about them in the first half. Spoke with Simon Cross. Hey, he was very happy with how it went. And the wind wasn't really it wasn't like steady, but it would come in spurts. And I think that played to Old Glory's advantage because they had the wind at their back. But I tell you what, overall, the game, like, how good is Peyton Wall for a young 100%. College kid?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, you coach college. You know, how good is he? Is somebody like that coming out of college?
I think, especially from his tenure at the moment and his capacity, he's got a very high ceiling. I think he reminds me a lot of a Nate Sylvia. I coached him at Cal Poly, and you can see him. He got his opportunity with the Legion, and he just hit the ground running with it. And I think he's just a grinder. I think Peyton has the capacity to stick with this team and really learn a lot from veterans like Charlie Abel and Whitey and people like that. And I think he's going to be great. And I think another thing to say, especially that really brought this team home, was the home crowd advantage. I'll say it right here. SeatGeek Stadium, that's one of the stadiums where that's where home crowd advantage really comes in, because I think you saw that in the documentary that came out, the docuseries with Sam Harris and then the previous year. And you get to see how much energy and electricity comes out of that stadium. Peyton Wall and SeatGeek Stadium, you guys got two kind of aces up your sleeve.
Yeah, it's funny. You talk about both of those elements and you talk about them in the same breath. And it's funny that you do, because you haven't been in stadium, and that's not your fault. My point is that watching from TV, you are still able to pick up on something that was clear to me as I'm standing on the sidelines in both the games. I think it was the NOLA game and then this one. Or maybe it was a Houston game. I can't remember which, but it was an NOLA game. The stands are packed. I mean, you've got about 4,000 people there. They're jammed in. They know he's from the Midwest. He's having a great game, and he's pumping up the crowd. He has a connection with the Hounds fans. Like, he realizes, like, when I was playing, my wife would yell all kinds of stuff at me at the sideline. I wouldn't pay any attention. He knows that they're there to watch him play, and he has a connection and a love for them. And that comes off on the TV broadcast, is my point. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. You know, it was incredible to see. And you're right. I think he has high ceiling. And then, you know, you got Noah Brown, who I think our fans are behind too, that are really two special athletes. And then there's a Chris Helsenbeck. Like, nothing flashy. He's not like one of those tens that that'll pull a rabbit out of his hat, like Patros. Even though Patros isn't like super fast or, you know, whatnot, he's so skilled, such a high IQ. Every once in a while, he pulls a rabbit out of a hat and he scores a, you know, a brilliant try or whatnot. Hilsenbeck isn't that kind of player. He just manages the game super, super well. He's super intelligent. His kicks are in the right place. He makes the right decision. He's just one of those guys that you can just count on consistently from game to game to manage the game in a way that works for the Hounds.
Well, I think you've got to look at it at the pieces around you. If you're able to put players in the right position, sometimes you don't need to be a magician. You can just play your particular position and you can utilize the pieces around you. If you've got other teams who, for example, like you've got Billy Meeks with the RFCLA, he's kind of leading the charge with ball carries and things like that. That's their go-to to set a platform. They utilize him in that fashion. So if you're able to utilize Hilsenbeck, and by the way, kicking is a very important part of the game. If you don't have that locked in, you're not going to get to the certain points where you can chip away at the scoreline or you can add in that territory factor. If that's his job for the team, that's his job. And I think he did a fantastic job of that over the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. So kudos to OGs. You guys played a great game. It was great seeing some of those lads out there, especially, you know, Billy Whiteside, my guy, Corey Daniel, you know, just the wrestler at heart, you know, tackling everything and everybody around him. But great game. Paul, Chris, got a chance to meet and see them again. Wonderful stewards of the American game. They're trying to put an American squad out there, and I think it's admirable. And I think a lot of what they're trying to do there, and it's great to see. Nevertheless, let's move on to game number two. And by the way, an update is we're watching TJ, because I don't know if you're seeing this, 12-7 in favor of Houston right now at the 31st minute mark, right? So
we're chipping away.
We're chipping away.
That's all I can ask for.
So let's go to Utah, Seattle. That was the evening game, just after the Hounds game, Utah 23, Seattle 21, your take on this game.
Well, I think you got to see an early Utah dominance. They came out very strong. They had their intent to capitalize on home advantage. Again, those types of regions, Chicago, Utah, you do have a very big home presence. I mean, even during the week, after the Utah victory. You get to see a couple of the boys from back in New Zealand. You saw Nani Laumapi and a few of the other boys sending out videos wishing the boys luck for the following week. You've got a lot of different contingents and different situations that can bring them a lot of juice, and I think they utilize their home advantage to their advantage. I think Jordan Trainer, a guy that I've got to actually rub shoulders with at the former Giltinis, and I actually got to meet him when I was coaching in Ponsonby Rugby Club. Phenomenal player, getting to get that early try and getting the conversion early on with getting them that early lead. I think the Warriors were able to maintain that control in the first half and also able to keep that strong defense going. I think the second half comeback with the Seawolves, you know you've got some talented players in that side, and they're not going to just let things slip. And obviously they have championship title aspirations, so they were really hounding back. But even though the gap was narrowed pretty significantly, I didn't ever really see the Warriors losing that game. They're such a strong team. They held some really good resilience and some game management. D'Angelo Luila with that penalty goal extending their lead, it's just ice in his veins. He's ready to come out. Now I think it's up to whoever the victor is. They have to go and face that home field advantage. Whoever wins out of the Sabercats and RFCLA, it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, Utah's an odd team because sometimes they come out and they come out real flat like they did against the Hounds in Utah, and where the Hounds, I think, were up by, I can't remember what the score line, like 31-12 or something like that at half. And the Hounds really looked to be able to step on the gas and you know, put the game in the rear view and move on. And then Utah just comes back and they battle back into the game and they put themselves in the driver's seat and win. And then a game like this where they go out ahead and they just kind of almost, they did score points, but they only scored one try in the whole game to Seattle's three, if I'm not mistaken. And so it's a real weird, that inconsistency, I guess, and I'm not worried about Utah, okay? Yeah, I'm a Hounds guy. But if I was a Utah fan, that would concern me, right? That they're hit or miss and how they score, how they, you know, go about playing and the pace and run of play. You know, the fact that there's much firepower they have in the back three, that they, you know, only put in one try over, you know, that game, if I'm not mistaken, and Seattle scores three. You know, but it does show that in playoff rugby, you don't have to put up tries. It's not like the regular season where you get a bonus point for going four tries, right? Keep the scoreboard moving, keep it ticking over, take points when you can get them, because as long as you're keeping the scoreboard over, you're putting the pressure on your opposition.
I think one guy that I probably will give credit to some of their resilience and kind of their composure is Liam Coltman. The signing with Liam Coltman, I think some of the things I've heard out of their camp is, although they have had games where I agree, they've come out very flat. When they go back into the sheds or when they go into their break to kind of reconfigure their thought process and a few things coming into the next game, I've heard he's had a really big say over how to do that as a squad, and he comes with a wealth of knowledge. So I think that signing really brings a lot for that team, and they've obviously got talent galore around, but it's not going to be one player that does everything for them, but I'm going to say he is a big contributing factor to how this team is going to go, especially through into the finals.
Yeah, Liam Coltman was as significant a signing offseason in the MLR, in my opinion, as any, right? And there's been a lot of good talent brought in this year. You know, Ali Devoto, Tim Sweel, Christian Leofano is playing right now. Some really amazing talented players, but you're right. Like, and I'm going to toot your horn as a Kiwi. No, I don't know that they set the bar. New Zealanders set the bar in rugby for how to mentally perform, right? They've always been on the cutting edge of how to get maximize the mental advantages and the mental gains in rugby. And it's just something they do so well. And to bring that in, and you're right, to bring that in, he can settle a team down. Okay, that's all right, lads. We've only scored one try, but you know, and then let's settle down. Let's play our game. Let's not panic and do what we need to do. Or, hey, in that Hounds game, hey, let's just get one try. Let's just get down in their end, put one in, and let's go from there and build. And those mental advantages that when you're playing at this level, you know, that 1 or 2%, that matters. You know, that matters. So kudos to them, and what a great find and pickup he is. And I'm sure it's you know, no small part due to Coach Cooper and his connections, obviously.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm really hoping that Liam will stick around for at least another season to kind of mentor that next generation, because yeah. I think the US can definitely utilize a lot of that when it comes to building towards their World Cup and just growing this league. But yeah, you said it. When I saw Christian Leilifano sign for RFCLA, I didn't not only cheer as a fan of RFCLA, I just cheered as a fan of the sport, because you get people like that. Again, wealth of knowledge, tremendous player. He's another person that can really show the trials and tribulations of a professional rugby player, having gone through leukemia previously, and he's been at the top of the mountain and he's at the lowest of lows. So yeah, I really hope we get more players like that into this league and really contribute to this growing talent here.
100%. All right, so let's go on to Sunday's matchup, the only matchup that actually happened. Again, the Houston-LA game was rain delayed. Oh, don't let me forget, there's one bit of information I do want to talk about. I don't know if you caught it in that Chicago game against Old Glory, but I do want to talk about that when we have an opportunity. So don't let me forget. But at any rate, let's talk about.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair. Every style, every home.
This one first. New England 32, Miami 10. The only game that happened on Sunday. Currently, Sabercats still 12-7 as of the recording today on Monday night. What were your thoughts on this game between these two I would say it's a clash of styles.
Yeah, no, I think with Miami being a newer side, they are still finding their identity. I think they've got a lot of players that have a lot of talent, like having someone like McNulty in the front row and little pieces scattered in here and there that can really complement each other. They are still finding their identity, but I think you can see why the Free Jacks are so strong and why they have that championship caliber. Is I think one player I really kind of come back to is during that 25th minute where they successfully defended their try line against a prolonged Sharks attack, preventing them from taking the lead. You can show that just the consistency and the determination to defend their line is something that can give a team a big boost. Once you go through that and you go through phase after phase and you go, no one's breaking through that, you're going to come back to the other side and you're just going to keep chipping away. I think also in their set pieces, converting a line out from 5 minutes from the Sharks try line as well, another thing that can give you a boost, especially a rolling maul. It's going to be something that's going to be really great for them moving forward into the playoff picture. And I think the fact that New England was able to just dominate possession and territory throughout the match, it really just kept the Sharks on the back foot and really limited their opportunities to attack. I think the one thing that the Sharks just struggled with, not necessarily all season, but for a big chunk of it, was just consistency to kind of capitalize on opportunities and also just trying to force a couple of things. I think from memory, I think there was an intercept pass in the back end of the game that led to a Free Jacks try. You obviously know that the Miami's trying to get back and they're chasing the scoreboard. Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's those types of things that really put Miami in a bit of a compromising position in some parts of this season. So it's not something where I thought it was going to be neck and neck going into this game. I had a pretty mind mentality that coming in that New England was going to be the victor in this performance, but the Sharks have come a long way. They've struggled through early patches and they've kind of grown through, and they are a promising team. I'm really excited to see what they've got next season.
100%. And if I seem distracted, it's because I am. LA just scored, my man.
Let's go, baby.
They're up 14-12 over the Sabercats. Reese McDonald, an absolute class try, gets a ball out wide from a wiper kick and just makes an individual effort from about, I don't know, 40 meters out and scores. It was brilliant. Great to see. So, yeah, they're at halftime right now, and LA's going into the sheds 14-12. So, great stuff. But getting back to this game, it was interesting. I spoke with Ryan Martin at the beginning of the season in our Coach's Corner segment. You can go back to that bit, you know, if you go to our YouTube, or you can go to any one of our audio podcast channels and check that out if you want to go back and look for this piece. But Ryan Martin had told me at that time that they were going to change and adjust a bit their kicking game because they were going to be playing 8 games at Fort Quincy. And I didn't really understand totally what that meant at the time. Like, what's it meant? I mean, yes, it's a turf field. It's going to be a little bit different. You know, okay, it might be dimensionally a little bit smaller, et cetera. And we know that they had some early season away games, which is, by the way, when they had, I think, that 4-game losing streak. And then they get at home and they put together during the regular season a 7-1 record at home. It really has become just a tough, tough environment for teams to win in Fort Quincy. But one of the interesting things I saw is a couple of chips over top that were into space. And that ball set up really, really different. You know, it's set up almost perfectly for the defensive team to play, and then for them to run onto. They had one try, I think they scored from one of those chips, and another try that was, I believe, called back for another reason. I can't remember what it was, but nevertheless, there were two of those types of chips, and it really set them up well, right? And it's kind of discouraging when you're a team like Miami that is kind of a run-and-gun team that throws and chucks it around a little bit, throws caution to the wind a little bit, likes to play a little free and easy. When you give up easy points like that, it makes it difficult, especially against a solid defensive team. And on that note, how about New England's defense? Do they come up with a ton of line speed, right?
Yeah, I think that's the one thing that you'll see a lot of, I guess, younger teams when they come up against heavy line speed. Although you do have the waves and the phases to get out of that, and you can pull shoot if you do have certain pictures, when it does come up so quickly against that, you'll see a lot of not necessarily inexperienced players, but guys that haven't seen that a lot. It's just too commanding over your split second to make a decision. And I think they just did that so consistently. Not only was it quick line speed, it was good line speed to hold connected in the line as well. So I will say you're 100% right. It's their defense is going to be out of this world heading into the playoffs. I do really like the point you make about the kicking, though. I think when you look at Ryan Martin and his previous history, Melbourne Rebels, Otago, the Toyota Verblitz. I think the one thing I used to love was watching the NPC and then playing under the dome in New Zealand. He would have some kicking strategies with his team as the attack coach that he would be able to manipulate so well, because there would be no wind, no other factors he would have to worry about. And some of the stuff that he would come up out of his back pocket were just so entertaining to watch and so beneficial for that team. So, yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. Kick strategy at home as well, outstanding.
Yeah, and it's funny, when we talk about that line speed and we talk about the pressure defense, as you mentioned, on younger guys, and it was one of the mistakes that led to that intercept try there at the very end, right? Instead of knowing that pressure's coming and maybe perhaps show and go, you know, hold that ball and then show it and then bring that ball back in, hold it, find that space, and then your runner's coming off your shoulder, you know, through that gap that's been created, and just give a little pop pass. I mean, those are one of the ways that defense can be opened up, or with some of the kicking strategies, that defense can be opened up. But I really think for them on that field, in that stadium with that crowd, that it's tough for opposing teams to overcome that kind of pressure that's happening from that whole part of the game.
Yeah, no, I wholeheartedly agree. I think you have a look at teams like Leinster, obviously completely different competition, completely different caliber of player, but you see that when they do have heavy line speed pressure, especially on the outside channels, they'll be able to utilize an inside runner who reads that and then pitch back to that inside, and either it is a carry to reset and kind of set the standard again to really set the platform, or you can put someone into space who can bend the line as well. So it's that kind of thing where 100%, like you said, reading that, especially in a split second, having to make that decision, trusting your insides, trying to find that opportunity and going from there.
Right. All right. So obviously we can't talk about the outcome of the Sabercats versus RFCLA. And what are you guys calling them right now? Are they still the Acorns? Or do you go through the whole RFCLA thing?
Mate, we're just calling him RFCLA. I know that the logo itself was they had the backstory, and it was the Acorn and the Mighty Oak Trees. I don't know. I personally am just riding with them because they're mama team.
I don't mind it. I don't mind the Acorn. It's a source of strength. It's a source of permanence. So I don't mind it. It doesn't bother me at all. I just, you know, I have to get used to the whole RFCLA thing. It's a mouthful. We're going to talk about that. Before I do that, I don't know if I want to get your thoughts. I don't know if you caught this, but, you know, in that Hounds game, I wanted to bring this up. Koikoi Nelligan went down with a pretty severe injury, and my thoughts, and because I know Koikoi, and I hope that he recovers well. But it was kind of interesting because I was on the sideline, and the Hounds managers and assistant coaches were absolutely livid because they were bringing on who is the starting number two for. I thought I wrote it down. The starting number two for RFCLA, Gattis, right?
Oh, yeah.
They brought him back on, and obviously that can happen because the front row are specialty players. They want the scrum to be safe, so that's okay. But did you know? Did you pick up on any of that as you watched at home?
I didn't really see too much coverage about it, but I did hear a couple of little, I guess, stories. Here's the thing for me. If it's by the letter of the law, and if people are getting, I understand, like you said, if a player is subbed off and they can come back on through front row laws, there shouldn't be any problems with that. So yeah, I didn't really hear too much about it or see too much about it on the screen. But when they did come back into town, I heard a couple of rumblings that I was a bit confused about. It's because, like, from my understanding, it's all green. It's fine.
So I guess the concern by the Hounds was that Issacaro is actually designated as not just a prop but a substitute hooker as well. And he was on the pitch. So their rub was that they said Issacaro should have been brought over to hooker because he's listed as a hooker on the sheet. And then that would have opened up for, I know I wrote this down. Where the hell was it? Here it is. Newcomer would have had to come off the bench to then come in at prop, and you know, so Issacaro could go to the hooker spot, and newcomer had exactly 0 minutes in the MLR up to that point. And that point, there was a critical scrum right there deep inside the OG's attacking red zone. And so, you know, obviously the Hounds wanted a less than strong front row in the scrum.
Yeah, I can see where technically in that form of the legality, then it can be interpreted like that, or it can be enforced like that. I understand, but we've seen people get away with much worse when it comes to substitutions in this league and in other leagues. If it is someone who is categorized as a hooker slash prop and front rower, technically, if I'm a coach, I'm probably going to put up the same gripe. Is it going to come off in my favor? Who knows? But if you full credit to the Hounds, if they're going to try and win it at any cost, you've got to make those calls and you've got to make those gripes. So I'm not going to hold it against them for having that. And it's within their full capacity. But if their fourth referee or whoever wants to make the decision says that it's good to go, it's just how refereeing is these days. There's just too many gray areas and there's too many other things where they could be interpreted in different ways.
Yeah, so it was all interesting stuff. I will be interested to see if anything comes of that. I'll be checking in with the Hounds at some point here to find out. Nevertheless, again, this Houston RFC LA match not over. We're at halftime. They have yet to ignite the second half as of the recording here on Monday night. But let's talk about who did you pick in this game, and what do you think that's going to mean going forward into the Western Conference final?
So this is an interesting question, because are you asking my head or are you asking my heart? Because it's going to give me two different answers. But I think if you look on paper and you look at the history of the clashes between RFC LA and Houston, you can't go past number one, the Sabercats home stadium, their home advantage. They have a tremendous facility and they have a tremendous field, and their fans get out in force. Like, even you saw the photos and videos yesterday of the rain pouring down. Their fans are still staying waiting for that game because they want to come out and support. So that's one. I think determined to break playoff losing streak as well. The Sabercats have had a strong desire to earn a playoff victory and snap that 0-3, I think it is, 0-3 playoff streak over the past three seasons. So that's another layer. And I think how physical and deep their forward pack is, that was kind of the third part that I was sitting there going, okay, I think Houston have a really good home advantage and they should, in theory, come out in this game. But the thing that I've always seen with RFC LA and with Stephen Hoyles at the helm and with a lot of players that we have, I think we've significantly improved this season under the new coaching staff and the addition of talented players. And I think the attack is the one thing that always sets them apart. If you look at our style of play, Billy Meeks is leading the league by a very significant amount in the ball carries, like I said previously. Mm-hmm. And we know RFCLA's attack is centered around him. But then you have two other players in the top 10 of ball carry statistics that also help set the platform by bending or breaking the line. So I think one example I always like to use is if you watch the game against that they played against Miami, you'll see that you RFCLA have a lot of variation. They have a lot of animation around their plays, and they create attacking opportunities for themselves, which leads to their ability to score points. RFCLA have shown, even on the road against the Sabercats, that they can score in crucial positions, but the one thing that's always let them down is their discipline and their turnovers. They can score like crazy, but they always force passes in crucial parts of the game, which really irks me. It's something where I understand what they're trying to do. It's a very high risk, high reward, but I think you've really got to pick your battles in that respect. Mm-hmm. And the last thing that is I've really struggled with is their disciplinary history. RFCLA, I think, have 20 plus more penalties conceded than the Sabercats, and they have double the amount of yellow cards. So if they can keep their discipline in check and just pick their battles with their attacking style, it can be such a deadly weapon. So it's a long story short and a long road for me to get here. I personally think that RFCLA have the capacity to win this game just because it is wet. It's a lot of rain and a lot of attacking opportunities they can present. But if you look on paper, Houston should come out on top if they can stay staunch in this defensive style.
Yeah, you're right. 21 yellow cards over the course of the season. They are the highest yellow carded team, and 4 red cards to Houston's 12-2. And then on the penalties, let me just look here. Penalty breakdown. Houston's. They're one of the
like terrible.
Yeah, the penalty breakdown. Let's see. That wasn't what I'm looking for.
I think
for.
It's like 170 something to like 150 with Houston. So, I mean.
Yeah, 168.
I can understand what the
180. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
So yeah, I can definitely understand what they're trying to do with their attack, but if we can keep the discipline in check, which is so crucial in playoff footy, that's going to be the one thing that we can just keep chipping away. We can keep trying to attack in the spaces we need to, and we can be patient, and we can just get the dub, hopefully.
Yeah, right now controlling possession and territory, but one of the areas that's failing them is 40% in the lineout for RFCLA right now to Houston's 100%. So be interesting if they can flip that script being in front right now on the scoreboard. All right, so let's move forward here as we begin to kind of bring this episode, by the way, 213. All right, we don't know what the outcome of this game is going to be, right? So let's talk Eastern Conference first. We got New England versus Chicago. They split, the home team winning each of the matches this season. We've talked about how difficult it is to win in New England at Fort Quincy. What are your thoughts there? Who's going to win this match?
I mean, as much as I would love to see Chicago get the victory, because I feel like I obviously have a very close connection to it, like with you and a few of the boys that are playing for the team now, Luke White, Charlie Abel. Their fans are so passionate, and they're dying for this next playoff berth that they can go into the finals. I just don't know if you can look past the Free Jacks. They've just been so consistent for so long. Like you said, they're going to be at home, which is a really, really big boost for them. I think the psychological edge is really going to play a big part on it as well. The Free Jacks defeated the Hounds in their most recent regular season meeting, I believe, and I think also beat them in the last year's Eastern Conference final. So
they did six, yeah.
Yeah, so I think if the Hounds can come out and they can have the second half that they did in the full 80 minutes like they did in this last playoff game, I wouldn't turn away from them. They're such a talented side and they've got such grit and determination. But if you're asking me to pick a winner at the moment, I think just on paper, you've got to go with the Free Jacks. Like, it's just they've just been so good and they've just got that championship form at the moment.
So the question is, can Chicago break down that rush defense? I think they have the ability to do that. Ollie DeVoto is at the 12 position, is pretty crafty with the boot. He can put a chip ahead. He can put a grubber through. Hilsenbeck can do the same. I think they can split that can open. They can do it. It's just that their attack is not complex. And so it's really fine. When they have opportunities, they have to maximize them and they have to really execute every part of their game. So when they get, you know, if they get a penalty and they get a kick down into the corner and they get that line out and that rolling ball going, they have to convert that. If they don't, they're going to be in for a long afternoon. Can they get on the board early, right, and take the crowd out of it? I think that's one of the ways to beat this crowd, right? You get up by a couple score. If you can get up by, you know, two converted tries, get up by 14, and then really, you know, use that solid defense they have to really shut down the New England attack. You know, use that. Then they have pretty good maul defense too to really thwart those opportunities when the Free Jacks get inside that, you know, 22 meter spot. You can take the crowd out of it and really make them a non-factor. Can they connect on offense? You know, going back to the offensive structure. One of the things I noticed in this last game, Peyton Wall had an amazing break and really had an opportunity to put somebody through, but there wasn't much support following up with that. And it's one of the things that I love watching New Zealand play for so long. TJ Perenara was always sniffing around, you know, to find that, you know, that ball that was there to be had off of shoulder. So can they find guys that get in that position? That's a big question. For New England, I think they have to figure out ways to spring Bellicon and Rue Milan. And on that note, like, two good wingers, Noah Brown and Peyton Wall, but Bellicon is a load on the wing. He is an absolute beast.
The one thing I'll probably say is that, like you said, with the Chicago's attack, they're not as animated. They don't have as many layers as Free Jacks might have. But I think this game is really going to come down to the performance of Chicago's forward pack. You have a look at their line-out win percentage. You have a look at the amount of carries they had in comparative to the Free Jacks. I think if you look at also their tackle completion and how many dominant tackles they've had as well. I think it's pretty close neck and neck for everything. So I think if you can have a forward pack in the phase play come out and be physical, they can at least bend or break the line, like you said, and really get that flow going. If they stay consistent on defense, hold that physicality on attack, I think Chicago's definitely got a shot. It's just going to come down to how the forward pack performs.
Agree. So I just can't pick against Chicago. I'm picking Chicago, but it's going to be a close
and
tight
game. And you shouldn't, because I've got RFCLA. If they come through this game and they win, everyone's going to tell me Utah's going to win that game. I'm not going to pick against them.
Yeah, right. Which, by the way, in the game at 17-14, Houston just scored a try, a little mistake by Reese McDonald. So we'll see if it's a converted try. Right now, Houston's up by three. But nevertheless, yeah, it should be a cracker of a game. So let's get down to the West. What are we looking at here? Obviously, we don't know the outcome of this game. We know Utah's true. They're going to be hosting. Is it matter who they play?
In my opinion, as much as I want RFCLA to come out of this or Houston to come out of this and really keep it neck and neck, although the Warriors do have their faults, I do think with consistency that the Warriors have had, it's just a no-brainer for me. We can go back to all the points that I spoke about previously, but you can't look past the team's depth, the leadership. Players like Jordan Trainer and other guys just really stepping up and executing in crucial positions. If it is RFCLA that does come out of this game and beats the Sabercats. The last time we faced Utah, we've lost by at least 10 points each time. So I think, again, there's a lot of things that we can work in our favor. If RFCLA come out, if Houston come into the game, they've got a strong forward pack that they can really come from, and they've got a lot of good firepower in their centers as well that they can really lean on. But in my opinion, Utah are the heavy favorites, and that's not really going to change, especially with them at home.
Yeah, so Utah's beat, you're right, it beat LA twice. On the other hand, Houston's beat Utah twice this season. So it's I think Houston has that ability if they come through against LA to beat them, and then LA has that ability. I would love to see Utah LA in that Western Conference final, just because you got two teams that are explosive as hell, and it would be in Utah, where I think you're going to get some better conditions than what you have in Houston right now, which is, in my opinion, it's hurting LA's game. The muddy, rain soaked pitch. But nevertheless,
we've had some great weather out here, mate. We've had some incredible weather, so I don't think we've had many opportunities to train in the snow, in the rain, right, or any terrible right conditions.
Right. So I'd love to see a matchup where, you know, two teams that love to run that have great finishers come up against each other. So that'd be good to see. I think depending upon who wins this game, I might go a different way. I think I would pick Houston over Utah if they come out of this one, but I might pick LA over you. Utah over LA if LA comes through. So it's going to depend. And then you got some interesting things happening. I mean, LA beat Chicago, you got Houston's been beaten twice by Chicago, but you know, the Free Jacks of LA's lost to the Free Jacks. You know, it's just all kinds of crazy stuff has been happening. But
it definitely keeps it interesting as an LA fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure does.
Definitely keeps it interesting.
So, yeah, it's gonna be a crazy last 2 weeks of the season. All right, man. So you got New England coming through, and it sounds like you got Utah going through a Utah-New England final. We won't talk about that until it actually comes to fruition, but we'll certainly get TJ's thoughts if that does happen, or at least whatever the final matchup is going to be. We'll get his thoughts. I'll chuck him in the pod when we cover it. Final thoughts in the season. Anything you want to throw about there?
No, I think I want to reiterate what the league is doing at the moment. I think they're attracting a lot of great talent. Like, I think when I got the opportunity to go and watch the trial match against San Diego Legion and RFCLA, they got to Santa Monica, my club, and Belmont Shore. We got to be the curtain raiser for that game, and now they got to get a lot closer with the community and showcase what is coming for new seasons. I got to chat a little bit to Lincoln McClatchy and a few of the other boys on San Diego, and I've been catching up with a few of the RFCLA boys over the season, and I'm really just enjoying how the growth of the league, the players that are coming in, and also the coaches that are coming in as well. It's continuing to grow, and that's what we want in the newer league, and building to this Rugby World Cup coming in. We just want to make sure we're imparting enough wisdom and getting enough solid foundation so we can really be successful and really make it a spectacle for all the people that are coming out. I want to see a strong USA team. And like you said, with guys that have been servants of the game, like a Marcel Brachy and other people moving on, I want to make sure we foster this new talent and get them in the right place and where they need to go.
Yeah, and by the way, when you talk about things trickling down the club level, just kind of parting shots here, you know, you know Luke White pretty well from his days in L.A. I've gotten to know Luke White a lot better from his time with the Hounds. It's great to see that he's actually my club, the club I played for, the Chicago Blaze, are moving up to Division One, and Luke White is going to be the head coach. He's bringing along with him a pretty nice group. Mitch Short's going to be coaching the backs, and then he's got two great you know, other assistant coaches are going to be working with the D3 guys and then doing some work with the D1 guys, Pifoletti and Carlissa. So it's going to be fun to see how they go as coaches, coaching the club game and working with Americans.
It's going to be great. I mean, I love the fact that you've got guys like Dave Dennis coming back and he's coming to be an assistant coach for an LA team. I love that Whitey has gone in and he says, I want to contribute to this community. And like you said, the Blazers are a phenomenal club. They hosted us tremendously when we were there for under 23 nationals a couple of years ago. And what he's going to bring to that club is literally going to trickle down. He's going to bring a lot of different things to that team and elevate the competition across the US. It was incredible to see Belmont Shore come out and go to the Nationals and get the dub. It's good to see that SoCal is strong and able to contribute that. But now that we've got all these other teams throughout other states and they're really taking it to them and they got a 1-2 punch and they're getting coaches in that can really contribute to that. I can't wait to see what American rugby is going to be like in 3 to 5 years, not just from an MLR standpoint, but from a club standpoint as well. It's a slow build, but we're getting there.
Yeah. And by the way, it's because of the good work of folks like yourself. I know how much you've done the college game and the women's game. And of course at the academy level as well, you've done it at all levels, doing the yeoman's work and always staying tight to the game and you're now bringing your knowledge and your skill set, your understanding of the game and your level-headed temperament and wonderful analysis. It's all, I mean, you would be an asset to anybody who provides the opportunity for you to coach them. So it's good to see you doing that great work out there in SoCal.
I appreciate it, mate. It's been a good year as a general manager and coach at Santa Monica for the men's team and getting an opportunity to provide that opportunity to coach and foster the next generation and get back in the coaching world. I say every season after I'm done, I'm flat out and I'm burnt out, but then it gives me a couple months and then the flame reignites and I'm ready to go again. So yeah, no, I appreciate that, mate. Thank you. It's lovely to see America just continue to grow.
Yeah. It's like being a made man in the mafia. Every time I try to get out, they pull me back in. Right. So, I know how it is. But yeah, it's great stuff. And we can't wait to see you in November, mate. It's going to be an absolute, absolute gas to have you out, have you jump on the pod in a live podcast with Scott and I live in person, at Reggie's. Guys, pick up your tickets, get the link below. You can get them, and have a lot of fun. Get yourself over to the pitch and enjoy the game and get back to Reggie's for a great evening to continue the celebration. It should be an absolutely wonderful weekend, but come check us out and join us at Reggie's for the rugby weekend. So, with that, TJ, I want to thank you so much for joining. Obviously the lovely backdrop of LA shining behind you, much better than my, you know, dark and cloistered, backdrop of my basement. But I appreciate it as always coming in and just imparting your wisdom and knowledge and folks, we'll be back next week. I'm probably going to be taking a break. So I'm doing a little vacay, here in July and I'm working on a show right now, a couple different things. So stick around, keep checking back with us. I've got a couple irons in the fire just to keep things cooking with gas. And one of them, I'm working on is a post USA summer tour. Well, it's not a tour. It's a tour of the United States, but summer test series breakdown. And I'm working on getting an all Eagle cast to join me. So former Eagles, I won't tip my hand, but I'm trying to get a couple different generations of Eagles represented and get them on the show and just talk about their thoughts on, you know, the three test matches ending with that England match in Audi Stadium out there in Washington, D.C. So check back with us. We're going to be, you know, trying to stay on top of things as we move through the summer. But nevertheless, we're always trying to grow the game one fan at a time. But with that, we'll see everybody at the next.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.